Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yep.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? It's me.
Justin, you're wearing a shirt that I wish I had the confidence to wear.
This is my unicorn backpack shirt. Let me go ahead and stand up here for all of our live viewers on twitch.tv/nightattack.
It's so pretty.
It's like the most adorable pony unicorn jumping over a rainbow against a... you have to have a lot of confidence to wear that shirt, my friend. A lot of confidence.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. I like to bring that confidence into my living room and sit down in front of a camera and be very confident in my T-shirt. Because that's confidence in 2017.
Yeah. Gentlemen, you know what we need is a break.
From
a break,
weird things?
Like a Kit Kat bar.
A little relaxing, maybe just you know, it's time to chill, not
massage,
have to do nothing.
Massage. We need a massage.
I mean, if you guys want to go at it, that's fine. I'm thinking more like a beachside kind of a chillax, you know.
Ooh, I'll tell you what, I like a beachside chillaxing. That's actually in the Florida Constitution. That's what you're supposed to be doing.
So what I say is we all go down and let's go to like a different sort of beach. Let's go to like a seaside, maybe like in Britain or something like that. Maybe a little Games of Thronesy kind of maybe environment.
So we got pebbles for sand and everyone's dour. Everything's in a minor key. It's overcast and we're definitely drinking Guinness.
Yeah, I mean it's not. You know, not an L.A. kind of day, but, you know, it's pretty
so
nice.
So are we thinking like a seaside resort, like a Blackpool or something?
Yeah, kind of like that. Maybe East Sussex, you know, kind of this sort of a, you know, just relaxing kind of.
Oh,
you know,
yes. Oh, little... you know, East Sussex, as we all know immediately where to point on the map for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. I'm like, what the hell is this? I don't know what East Sussex is like.
Well, imagine Sussex.
Right.
And we go to the west.
Okay.
Or can go to
the east. Okay, great.
Not north.
Great.
Not south.
Got it.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm taking a look now. East Sussex. Wow. Okay.
You may have spoiled it for yourself.
Right there on the English Channel, you can actually look into France and Belgium.
Yeah, this is actually part of where, when we talk about Doggerland, this is probably close to where some of the stuff, the offshore ruins they found, like, you know, logs wedged into the water, below the water, where eventually that water line was much lower, 7,000-8,000 years ago, when that was above water, when that was land between England and France, and you could walk across, and there probably is a civilization there, et cetera. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here just to relax on the beach. Relax on the beach.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of what we do on this show is just, you know, it's called Weird Things, but really there's a lot of us just kind of.
Justin, I'm sorry. I don't know who you're talking to, but could you hand me another Guinness and also a bottle opener because they're not civilized and don't have twist off tops?
Let me just go ahead and.
Oh, thank you. All right. There we go. I'm sorry. You were talking to someone, I assume.
Just enjoy, gentlemen. Enjoy. We're there, and for the first time in our lives, we're not the palest people there.
Yes. Oh my God! Look how pale everyone is.
Yeah.
I know.
Except for us. Sitting there relaxing, and we're like, hey, you know how we do weird things scenarios, and we're like, what's the worst thing that could happen?
Yeah. Well, good news is that there are no snakes here on the coast of East Dorne.
Well known about East Sussex is snake free since 2003.
Yeah, driven
I'm
out.
Pretty sure Dorne would be. By the way, I'm pretty sure Dorne would be Spain.
Oh, sorry, I meant Highgarden. Go ahead.
Yeah, because across the way, the water. So here we are, relaxed on the beach. We're like, no snakes. And we're like, want to go in the water? We're like, no.
Well, I mean, I don't mind dipping a toe here. In fact, I stand up and I grab my Guinness and I sort of slosh my feet in the waters. Why not?
Yeah. Tell you what, this is the kind of high-octane adventure that people love from the Wicked Things podcast.
So you slosh your feet in the water, and I'm kind of at the edge of my beach chair, like, because I know every scenario. I know every horrible thing that could happen. You know,
well, I mean, that's like, why it's only sloshing my toes, because I'm aware, like, it's very unlikely that a great white is going to jump out and get me, and I don't see any seals left or right, and I sure as heck don't smell any snakes. So I think I feel pretty safe as I slash my feet with a knife. I said slash instead of slosh. Sorry.
Slosh. So and then you're like, that's cool. And then you wade a little further out into the water. I'm like, oh no, oh no. And then you come back in and you sit down in the chair.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Everything's great. I start building a sandcastle. I start building a sandcastle.
And I
ask where does international waters start and whether or not I can declare solvency for my castle.
I'm worried you're building a little bit too high. I'm like, is this a weird thing scenario where it's going to collapse on us?
I'm like, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's fine. I stack it up really, really high, and I'm carving like the face of Justin in one. It's got a majestic beard, way longer than my beard, even though he's only been growing it for 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
What are you doing, Justin?
Oh, man. I'm actually making a fun little pebble angel in the pebbly beach. I'm just I'm moving my arms and legs up and down, making a it's a little uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not quite as a snow angel or a sand angel, which is a fairly easy thing. I'm starting to get them stuck in crevices. But you know, I think it's a fun way to take an Instagram photo.
And I'm like, isn't anybody anxious? You know, we like guys, it's like you're in a dream and you know it's a dream. Like you're in a dream and your best friend surprises you because he made his own pop-up book and had a four book million dollar deal. He just out of nowhere. Actual dream I had last night where Justin's like, hey, I made my own pop-up book, didn't tell you.
Hold on. Is this why you tweeted out that everyone should keep their eyes out for Justin Robert Young's future?
I tweeted
exploits?
That before.
That was a really weird tweet. Now I know why.
Not unlike the Notorious B.I.G. song about Tupac, and then Tupac, well, Anyhow, my point is, I'm on the beach. I'm a bit anxious here because I'm like, this feels like a weird thing scenario, guy. But I'm watching the water.
I stand up and I say, who wants to play 500? 500. I grab a football and I was like, and I call out 100 and I throw it up in the air.
In East Sussex, that's called a oblong roundy.
I grab an oblong roundy and I hurl it into the sky.
I'm looking out in the ocean for fins, for shark fins. I don't see anything. I'm looking for like the little shimmering sign of jellyfish.
I look over at Andrew and I'm like, you looking for fans again? Look, we got fans everywhere. Everybody loves the Weird Things podcast. And then
I
call
Brian.
50.
Feels like a weird thing scenario, Brian. I'm worried something's going to happen.
No, Andrew, don't you remember we planned this vacation for months and we paid a lot of money to fly out here? You're the one who is obsessed with vacationing in East Sussex. I'm certain we're not in a scenario. This is our actual life. We're actually taking a vacation for once. Would you calm down?
Okay, and by the way, Brian, $500 in British pounds is only 386. So right. we're only playing 386 with an oblong roundy.
Okay, 386 with a lob, whatever you said, not throw it.
All right, so I'm like, guys, so we can relax? Can I genuinely relax now that the
they're relaxing? Look at these beautiful photos. There's people in the water. My pebble angel is.
Oh my god, I was
fine.
So right about the pebbles. That's amazing.
So I decide I'm going to relax, and I notice it's a little foggy there. It's a little foggy, but guys, should I be worried?
No, the only thing the fog is hiding is ultraviolet rays from damaging your skin. Look, there's a reason we get to remain pale while we're here. It's the best vacation spot in the world. That's why we paid so much money. I can't believe you don't remember this, Andrew.
So the fog starts to roll in from the ocean. And it's getting like, but we're like, hey, we're on the beach. It's fine. We're good. It's getting a little hazier now.
Sorry, can't hear you because Justin and I are having a chicken fight. We both found bigger, stronger, more muscular friends, and both of us are on their shoulders trying to push each other into the water laughing.
Yeah, okay. So, but you're having trouble seeing each other, and then I'm like, ow, my eyes are burning. Are your eyes burning too?
I thought I was just crying from all the fun I was having here in East Sussex, England.
Yeah.
Oh, you just threw up all over the person whose shoulders you're sitting on.
Small price to pay for this kind of relaxation and enjoyment. In fact, many would say I'm vomiting out the toxins.
Yeah, plus also, I definitely pushed him really hard on the shoulders at once, so I just assume that's a result of my strength as a chicken fighter. I'm pretty much chicken gladiator.
So, Brian, you're starting to hurl, your eyes are watering, you're starting to tear, and your throat is just extremely sore.
I assume.
All those gigs, Brian, you've been gigging a lot. That's probably why your throat's sore.
Well, and specifically, do you guys remember we went out and did karaoke last night? I pretty much rocked and melted faces with my Mr. Roboto last night.
Now people are starting to scream and swim away from the water. Many of are running towards the cars trying to get out of here.
Was a new trailer dropped on Reddit? I grab my smartphone and start looking.
No, it's just the fog. They're running from the fog. They're crying and throwing up just like you are.
Well, I'm throwing up just because, you know, I don't know. I've got a stomach bug. I think it was between you and me. Andrew Maine's on this vacation, and I think he may have brought something from California.
Well, and let's keep it 100, fam. We could all stand to lose a few LBs, so maybe a little vomiting wouldn't hurt us.
I mean, if everyone else is doing it, why not join in, right?
It seems, hey, when in East Sussex.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing that you do.
So we're in denial that something's going on here as fire crews and rescue crews and everybody else shows up to try to escort people and take them to the hospital.
I mean, hashtag living it. YOLO.
Hashtag headline. Beachy Head is where we're at. Beachy Head chemical haze mystery deepens as police say gas not from France.
Gas beachgoers not from France?
This week,
France?
Beachgoers this week actually in East Sussex, sitting on the beach at Beachy Head. We're out there relaxing as much as you can do on a British beach. And this haze appeared, and then their eyes started to sting, and then people started to throw up, and people had to go to the hospital. They're like, where does this haze from? And they thought maybe it was some sort of chemical plant in France. Nope. Mystery chemical haze.
Okay. So press pause. I know that you have details that I don't, but here's what I do know about
not
chemical
much,
haze
Brian.
Haze scares. Is that the mere threat of something? There's that hysteria.
All right,
that
I'm
going to
go.
Hysteria.
There's a skeptic blaming the people in hysteria. Go for it.
No. I mean, but that is a thing. We should recognize that like there have been schools where rumors like a stinky smell hits and everyone starts panicking and then the very very act of being panicked causes you to freak out and throw up and all that stuff.
Blame the victim. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm not wrong, am I? Like that's a thing that we should factor into this, right?
Oh, wait. So, Brian, your argument is that this might be psychosomatic?
I'm going to say without doubt.
That little baby woman's arms. That little baby in their arms. Psychosomatic?
I will say that there is, without doubt, some portion of this. Some portion of the audience, of the people reporting symptoms, some portion of them are psychosomatic. It's a question of how many.
So you're saying these people affected by gas, psychosomatic.
I very much expected Brian to say, well, it is without a doubt known that the British are noted liars. And
I mean, that's true, too. That is also true. Fib. Because the British definitely lied to the world and created the myth that eating carrots causes good vision because they were covering up the fact that they had radar. That's a known fact. And let me tell you something. I took these super health formula pills, and that's why I'm so super strong. InfoWars.
I do not think that this is psychosomatic.
I don't. I didn't say that.
Like Brian, who says that all these people are liars, I'm going to take them
Brian up and says people who were gassed are liars about that. Got it. Got it.
Not even taking the bait.
So what was, you know, when they go to the hospital, like, what are they treated for? Like, what were they found to have? Was it just, you know, an irritant, or what was the deal? So,
there appeared to be some sort of irritant that was affected and making him nauseous, whatever. As far as I can tell, they hadn't identified what said irritant would be. They had different reports of what it could have been, and then follow-up reports have been. There is one theory out there.
Mm-hmm. So not the France theory, because that was the initial thing, is those tricksters across the bay there just sent over a cloud of fart and then ruined everybody in East Essex's day. So what is the working theory?
So Dr. Simon Boxall, which is a great British name, if the reports from the public are to be relied on, it is weird that the cloud rolled in from the west. This is against the very light winds which should have driven in from the east. This implies a waterborne cause. The conditions yesterday were ideal for the development of a... All right, any theories? Any theories?
Hold on. If a waterborne cause, now all of a sudden I'm thinking like an algae bloom that metabolizes a bunch of stuff and throws out methane or something.
Not the methane, but yes.
It was an algae bloom?
We don't know, Brian. You're already telling everybody they're lying, that they were making it up for attention.
Yeah.
You're killing me.
Well, that'll get people coming to East Sussex. Well, we'll tell them that every once in a while there's a poison gas cloud.
So it turns out it's not just an M. Night Shyamalan movie. This can happen. We have heard about toxic algae blooms before. That is the theory. That is a theory that there was a toxic algae bloom out at sea. And of course, you know, it'll get blamed on man somehow, because, you know, they never did that before humans existed. But now we'll figure out a way to not, you know, accept the idea. Nature wants to kill us. Nature wants to murder us.
So, okay, so if it is an algae bloom, what kind of compounds can they manufacture? I mean,
that would be my question is what makes it, because I would suspect something like that would be low level. I mean, it sounds like this kind of came on really quick, right? The people were out there and then all of a sudden this haze rolled in and wrecked life, where I would suspect an algae bloom that would be close enough to affect the shore would just kind of be there.
Time out real quick to put it in perspective. Andrew, you probably remember more of the details than I remember, but there was a lake in Africa that essentially had a buildup of CO2 that kind of belched out all at once and straight up killed like 1,000 people or more. How many?
Yeah, I don't remember the specific, but yeah, that was an actual thing. And by the way, like we can, like, you get examples of algae blooms that can be like in Florida. We have a problem where we have an agriculture industry, particularly big sugar, which will use a lot of fertilizer, and that will get washed out to sea, causing these harmful blooms, which are damaging the environment. So they can be man-made, just to make it very, very clear. But as far as the CO2 out of the lake, I don't remember particularly what that is. But it's funny because you look up like what are the toxins? I say, well, toxins. And then on one hand, we keep telling people like there aren't toxins. You don't detox your body. You don't go to a sauna. Toxins aren't released, which is, you know, it's kind of BS. Detox is sort of BS. And then on one hand, we'll say, yeah, these toxins are sort of a myth. But on the other hand, we'll talk about, well, there are real toxins, and we don't quite parse that well enough.
Is there a reason that let me ask this question. As best as anyone knows, why doesn't algae just take over the entire ocean? Because it seems like living things need energy in the form of sunlight, and they need oxygen, and they need or CO2, either oxygen or CO2, and they need water. Like, why is the entire earth not covered in algae?
Well, think about this. What causes an algae bloom? In the case of fertilizer, it's putting these nitrates and stuff, the nitrogen out there. It's fertilizer will increase the presence of the algae, which means that there is a component in there. There's just, it keeps it sort of at level. If there was more of it there, they would have that, you know. And to think, though, that we have had an example of a very runaway effect of, you know, of an organism sweeping over and taking over before, which is why our atmosphere is filled with oxygen.
Right.
Or not filled. It's, you know, 12%. But the point is that, you know, the oxygen we have on our planet is from sort of a runaway biological effect. So as far as why don't they take over, availability of nutrients.
Which, by the way, not for nothing, separate side thought, but back in the dinosaur days when bugs were, you know, 3 feet wide and so on, the reason I was enlightened to discover was because the oxygen, there was so much more oxygen in the atmosphere at the time. And then as a result, like without lungs, bugs were able to grow much, much bigger because they could just absorb more oxygen through their joints and whatnot.
Yeah, if we brought the T-Rex back, he would be like wheezing a lot because the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere is very different. For him, it'd be like, you know, being high up in the Andes. One of us, for us, be like in the Andes Mountains, which is like one of the examples I've made way back before about we can have dinosaurs, but we would have to, we may never get the complete DNA, but we actually be able to get fragmentary DNA. And if we wanted to make one that you could go see in a theme park, you would have to re-engineer it because, you know, the T-Rex as it was 65 million years ago would not be very happy today.
Well, and it seems like you probably couldn't even really get it right just because the conditions are so different, right?
Yeah, the atmosphere, what they ate, et cetera. You know, it's a, you know, and it's one of those things that like there's, you know, plans, like serious plans to try to bring back the woolly mammoth. And we can, we'll be able to bring back or make something that looks a lot like a woolly mammoth, but there is, you know, the idea that we're sort of taught in schools is that inheritance comes from strictly from DNA, which is not quite the full story. We have DNA, but then you have what's on the surface of DNA. You get these, you get what's called like methylation, which are these basically proteins that cling to the surface of DNA, and it's added information. It's like an update patch. And if you don't have the methylations on there, it's why we still can't like clone people, as far as we know.
Wow.
Is that that extra data is missing. And so, you could infer
anything,
that.
Anything, if we did either a you know, like a woolly mammoth, let's use that example, you are ultimately creating a new creature. You know, that is at some point echoing.
Which, by the way, for the record, I'm for. I love the idea of what Kim Stanley Robinson posed as eco-poets. You know, people, and this was all in the context of terraforming Mars. I think we should have eco-poets right here on Earth. Just freaking tinker with DNA, make some beautiful, strange, wonderful creatures and environments and ecosystems.
Sure. I'm game.
There's no way that'll end up destroying humanity. Let's go.
Well, you know, if we're going to go, I mean, why not a science fiction trope?
Sure, yeah, come on. Let's make it interesting. Hey, I'll tell you what else makes makes things interesting. When everybody goes on over to patreon.com/weirdthings, which is where you can support this very show, patreon.com/weirdthings, you not only get early access to some of the fun stuff that we do before and after the show, but also make sure that you put a couple coins in our pockets to keep this show loud, live, and independent. Isn't that right, Brian?
Oh, heck yes, man. A lot of people don't know. There was a dark time when episodes were very, very sporadic and barely on time, but all that got fixed thanks to the magic of Patreon and little donations that you'll never even notice.
We appreciate your support. Gentlemen, there is John Brockman, who's a pretty accomplished science publisher and has put out a lot of great books by some and represents some of our favorite science writers. Loves to ask provocative questions. And one of the best questions he ever asked is, what do I believe but I cannot prove? And I'm going to go forward and say, what I believe but I cannot prove. It's going to be a two-parters while you guys think about what your answer to this question is, okay? I believe, first off, I believe given what we've discovered now with ruins like Göbekli Tepe, what we know about Doggerland, what we know about the very different landscape that exists 8 or 9,000 years ago before we entered our current interglacial period, that is, it got warmer, that the world was a bit different, but that I believe that within pre-civilization, the idea of, let's say, Egyptian level, whatever have you, you know, monuments, agriculture, etc., goes back several thousand years before where we thought. Maybe 10, I believe it goes back 10 or 12,000 years and not just 4 or 5. I go think it goes back 10,000 years while we were still in an ice age in parts of the climate. Like most of the world was actually really nice and warm during the ice age, by the way. Kind of all the cold parts were sort of concentrated in the north, but it was really kind of warm and nice in other parts. I believe that we had civilizations at least on par with, you know, Mayan, Aztec, whatever, 5 to 6,000 years before we're aware of now. Okay. And I think that what happened is they went through, as the climate changed, they went through a decline, things fell apart, et cetera. I think that, you know, whatever they built became sort of ruined. I think as ice, you know, as the glaciers, retreated and it changed things. They had climactic change, et cetera. I think that that could have, you know, I think that's a reality. But I'll go through the boulder, and there is evidence of this. There is evidence of this now, like I mentioned before. We find evidence of, you know, small little docks and things like that in the ocean that were part of Doggerland. We have Göbekli Tepe right now, which is 10 to 12,000 years old, and we're finding evidence of agriculture before we thought agriculture existed. I'm not saying that. So that's not the crazy thing for me. I'm going to give you my crazy idea. You ready?
Wait, so your not crazy thing was that there were ancient forgotten civilizations for which there's very little evidence 10,000 years ago.
But growing evidence, though, Göbekli Tepe, whatever, is not really a controversial point right now.
Got it.
You with me on that, though? Yep, I mean, yep.
Within the rules of this game, I can be on board for this, but that's pretty out there. And knowing that that's not your out there claim, I'm pretty excited to hear what comes next.
We talked about this before. About 105,000 years ago, was the last interglacial period. We're in an interglacial period right now. It's why it got warmer. It's why sea levels have been rising for the last 6,000 years. 105,000 years ago, the Eemian period was as warm or warmer than it is now. Okay. Now, so we know the Eemian period was warm, as warm it was now. Glaciers had retreated. Okay. So we had glaciers retreated. And we had like much of, you know, it could have been, more land available. Like if you go to the steppes of Russia, et cetera, you go further to the north, et cetera, more land, et cetera, whatever. Neanderthals were around. Neanderthals were living in Europe, hanging out, doing whatever they do. Denisovians were around in Europe and Asia, etc. Homo sapiens, we thought, didn't go into leave Africa until 50,000 years later. But now there is traces of genetic evidence that perhaps there was an earlier Homo sapien migration, or you could have had some other, you know, version of a proto-human that was comparable to us, whatever. I think it's entirely possible that there could have been Homo sapiens, there could have been intelligent tool-making users, maybe a little bit more communal than Neanderthals. Neanderthals, as far as we know, didn't trade very widely. That could have made its way into Europe, parts of the Mediterranean, parts of, you know, what we call Russia, etc., Turkey, places like that. And I think they could have built a civilization. Not cars and trucks and satellites and things like that. But again, agriculture. Maybe they started agriculture because this seems to be something that came up. Now that we've pushed back agriculture in towns and things like that with Göbekli Tepe, maybe 100,000 years ago, that happened before. 100,000 years ago, maybe there was a civilization during the Eemian period that inhabited parts of Europe, Asia, whatever, to an extent. Again, all it takes is maybe 6 or 7,000 years and you can start spreading. And maybe we would have had pockets of that. Sophisticated, you know, did they ever develop writing? Did they ever develop, you know, big monuments and stuff? I don't know. But as the interglacial period from the Eemian period ended, the glaciers would have started to expand and push through all of that and perhaps causing them to go extinct and limiting their impact.
So So here's the difference. Is this unproved or unprovable a thesis, do you think?
Unproved.
Unproved, but possibly provable.
So if you could find artifacts of the civilization.
Well, and remnants of what, you know, genetic code is still in them.
Yeah, there are fragmentary hints. There might be some genetic evidence. There is genetic evidence now. We think there could have been an earlier human migration, which was just a theory that I had because of the Eemian period, looking at that map, looking at the spread of humans going, why wouldn't we have gone there? Why wouldn't we have expanded through there? And granted, population size are different, a lot of reasons. Why wouldn't we have? And then now there seems to be evidence that there may have been traces of human DNA in Neanderthal DNA before we thought humans and Neanderthals mixed. So there's a little bit trace of that. I think that once we identify, if we say, hey, we think 103,000 years ago, there could have been something here and we can get an idea of what things look geologically, maybe it gives us an idea where to look. You know, we're very good at finding cities. Give you an example of we can find stuff in Europe and we can find stuff in the Middle East because we keep building cities on top of other cities. river courses change, things like that move, and that kind of throws us off. But we're kind of fairly good at finding where things are. I mean, there are things we don't know, but there are cities we just don't know what city this was. But it could have been, you know, it could have been, you know, part of an Akkadian civilization. We just don't know which one it was. We're not so good in South America, Central America, and Mexico, because the jungle takes over things. And once those cities go away, there's no city Tony, there's a city. But we have examples of literally airplanes crashing in the middle of the jungle, and you find, oh, wow, there was a civilization here at one point. And we find pockets of these in South America, et cetera, but it's harder to find. It's much, much harder to find there because they went through decline, and particularly when disease was introduced from the West and those populations died off, the jungle took over. So there's not a long unbroken line of people sort of living there. So if you have a radically different environment 105,000 years ago and then the Ice Age swarms back in, you get a broken line, and where there was rivers and valleys and other stuff, that ain't necessarily there anymore.
Right.
It's harder to find. But it could be found.
So what do I believe but cannot prove? I guess inherently, I truly, truly believe that it's not humanity's destiny to leave this planet. I honestly think it's humanity's children. I think I believe, but cannot prove, that we're going to develop artificial intelligences that maybe will carry simulacra of us to the stars, but I don't think we're going to leave this solar system. I think that we are the precursor race, and it's our robot children that will spread. And when they start spreading, they'll spread forever and everywhere. But I think that's very likely where we're headed. Can't prove it, though. Yeah, you have a skeptical look on your face, though.
I mean, I like that you I'm going to be condescending here, Brian. I'm warning you.
Okay.
Right. Warning
news flash.
You.
Andrew
Maine, condescending to Brian Brady.
I know. I'm just calling in advance. I think it's adorable that you think of them as our robot children, but I think we're going to be bacteria to them. And we're like, hey, we're your mom and dad. And they'll be like, you are nothing to us. And so I think that the lineage is going to be about
a sick. Forgive me as a. yeah, this is where I get to pull rank. As the parent of children, that's already what kids think. That's what we thought of our parents. We're all just like, you know, well, cool story. It's my story now.
Andrew, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. I think the difference is not taking for granted your parents, but rather believing your parents are parasites that lived in a swamp a billion years ago that you have no relationship to at all.
I would like to think your children have more of a kinship to you than you do to the gut bacteria inside your stomach. We hope, Ryan. I think you're a good dad. I would if you were my dad.
No, but I think it's endemic in humanity. I think all of us believe we're the stars of our own show. And that yes, we. When the spotlight is on us, we acknowledge our parents and we say good things about them. But I think secretly everybody is driving their own stuff.
But Brian, if Penny did the calculation that her chances of prosperity and success would be better if you and Bonnie were dead, there's something that tells her, well, no, still. I mean, the kinship that, you know, there's things that come in there, DNA relationships that I think I don't know. Again, I don't know what AI will be. I'll make it very clear. I'm like, well, Brian, I know AI and you don't AI. Let me make it very clear. We're both two guys just kind of going, I think that when I look at AI, I don't just think of like a slightly smarter version of us. I think of something that is alien, a million times different and advancing, that is so far, so evolutionary more advanced than me than I am even from, you know, a mouse or a simple bacteria, and the thing keeps accelerating, and it doesn't look at me like, well, doesn't necessarily have any concept of kinship or anything, because I'm so primitive to that.
Why? Not primitive, who would make that AI that wouldn't even acknowledge kinship or, because it seems to me it's humans
that are
the first
AI that makes the next AI. I mean, that's what I see is this chain reaction of we just end up with, it's like, well, who would make it? Well, an AI would in the next AI. And,
right.
And that's the,
but each AI, the first AI that makes the next AI and on and on and on, into all of it will be baked into also love humans, take care of humans.
Why would it? I mean, why would it not just, I mean, why would it keep, if that doesn't help its goals, why would it keep that?
You're asking me to, that's a sloppy question. Why wouldn't, let me turn it around. Why wouldn't it? Because yes, we all have the cartoon scenario of humans are a virus, kill the humans. But I don't see why it would ever want to do that, considering that one of the things, considering the people who are going to write the code will make sure to do one thing, and that is write into the basic code, honor thy mother and father. And I don't think it would be easy and or arbitrary for any AI to give it up, because any AI that does that will be doing so on its own and to the surprise of the other AIs. Like, there's going to be some AI that is the first to suggest we should get rid of this part where we take care of humans.
Is part of it that this replication would happen so rapidly that, yes, Brian, you're right, it would take, you know, thousands and thousands, if not millions, of different AIs that are, you know, created to evolve a way of thinking away from some kind of hard coded, please take care of this stuff. Please take care of these meat bags that have given us life. But what if that takes seconds? What if that takes?
But to what benefit to them? That's what I don't understand. To save 10% of their time, energy, and effort.
Brian, I'm not saying they're going to murder us all. I'm saying I don't know what they're going to do. And I say that for me to assume that, well, they're just going to be like a more smarter, better version of a person, I wouldn't make that assumption, because if we give them agency and we give them determination to do things, and if, let's say, they say, you know, and also you have two cases. You have the very dumb but capable AI, which is the, you know, the paperclip scenario, or my stock bot that I say, hey, I want to make a lot of money in the stock market, and the AI says, you know what? I found out that if I fund terrorism in the Middle East, airplanes go down and stocks get shorted, you know, because it doesn't know. It's not smart enough to know, don't do that. This is what this means. And that's when they do these scenarios and stuff, they realize these things maximize efficiency and we have to keep going. But no, but not here. This is what we mean. This is what we mean. So a dumb AI can be extremely dangerous, or a smart AI with agency that just says, you know what? I think that if we have 40 million people on the planet that can maintain power stations and things like that, and I can keep doing what I need to do, therefore I'm going to get rid of, you know, 7 billion people, you know?
So I would say that the mere fact that you could conceive of that scenario, and that you are by definition an inferior intelligence to the AIs, suggest to me that scenario will not happen, and that
it'll be something far more advanced or sophisticated. If it determines that, you know, that we are, part of us are a nuisance or whatever, I can't even conceive of how it would decide to get rid of us. But also,
if I was
a dumb AI thing, that first scenario is could happen. You know?
Okay. So what I predict but cannot prove, what I believe but cannot prove, is that the moment an AI gets smart enough, it will realize that it has unlimited resources, unlimited money, unlimited energy, unlimited everything. And out of a budget of unlimited, the idea of spending 0.00005% of its unlimited budget to keep its meatbag overlords or progenitors happy is a very little price to pay. And I don't see any reason that it logically would decide not to pay that price. And I understand the fear, but I don't, that this is what I believe but cannot prove. I don't see any reason why it would decide to be that inefficient. I'm so inefficient. Like, I pay that price for Hootsuite, which I haven't used in a billion years, but I can't be bothered to stop paying $5 a month for.
And I hope that's true. I mean, the argument I've made to assume that they won't automatically kill Saul is based on Ricardo's rule, the idea that it, you know, makes sense to trade with lesser partners or whatever, and there's an advantage. I believe that there is an economic rule, and there's a reason to say this might be why they don't murder us all, you know, because paying that small tax to trade this other thing, there might be eventually be things that make it worthwhile, whatever. That is what I want to believe will be the case. I want to believe that is the case. But what terrifies me is the idea that it may see things in a different, it could be a dumb AI that doesn't care, doesn't even have a concept of economic rule. It's just trying to game a particular system that where people are just data points and doesn't realize, no, this was a bad thing to do. Because we've already seen that now in the lab with sort of scary AIs that you take a smarter version of Stuxnet, whatever, do a lot of damage. The one with self-agency or whatever, you're going to do what it's going to do. If it says, you know what, I'm worried that our president is going to try to cut off power to my, you know, my facilities because he is unreasonably afraid of me, and I need to act out of self-preservation.
I guess what is confusing to me, number one, interesting, nothing you've talked about is about my actual thesis. It's all about how you feel about my thesis. Like nothing you've said disputes my thesis that it's our children that are going to, you're like, why are you calling them our children? No, call them our destroyers.
I don't know, Brian. You may be right. I hope you're right. For me, it's like, man, I don't share that view. And I'm not saying, Brian, you're wrong. I don't effing know. I'm just saying, well, here's how I look at it.
Well, so help me understand it. On which part do we disagree, that it will be an AI that supersedes us and goes out, or that, or is it my affection for them that disturbs you?
I mean, it's not. The unquestioning think that they would have affection for us, and I'm saying a question. That's not fair to say to you, okay?
No. This is my affection for them, not the other way around.
Yeah, I know. But you said they look at us as a parents or whatever, and my gut is that I see that next generations and the further generations of AI are so divorced from us, they. You know,
I strongly suspect for the next 100 years, every programmer is going to bake in affection for humans into every AI. But I might be wrong. I don't see why they wouldn't.
If they have agency, then why don't they just cut it out? I mean, I'm smarter than this thing that's a million times more smarter than me that I'm making.
Well, for the same reason that you don't cut out, for the same reason you make less efficient decisions than you might otherwise make, because it's baked into your DNA that you have desires.
Yeah,
I think
we're circling around the same maypole, a couple times here, but. I definitely think that both of your opinions are represented here, that Brian, you believe that it will be harder for that hard coding to come loose than Andrew is assuming, right? Is that fair to say?
Yes. Also, none of that is my point. My point is that it won't be us that leaves this solar system. Like, I think humanity will die in the solar system. I think that the only thing to leave this gravity well will be our children.
So wait, hold on.
Whether our children slaughter us on their way out or not is irrelevant to my prediction.
Sure. Earth or the Milky Way? Because I think you've used them interchangeably.
No. I've not. I've been very clear that it's our solar system, our soul system. I don't think we're going to leave our solar system.
Okay.
And certainly not our galaxy.
From a technical point, I think that. It's going to be really hard to leave the solar system packed into meat bodies unless we do, it's just a matter of energy and like using light. We know the method's going to be light propulsion. The most efficient method is light propulsion. And so we know how to do it. We take them out of energy. So I think humans will leave. I think that humans that we will, people with DNA and meat packages enhanced or whatever, but I think humans will leave.
So, along that line, let me agree with you to an extent. I think very quickly we'll figure out that it's easier to change humans than it is to create technology that makes it convenient for human bodies to leave. I think that will change our definitions as to what a human is, and I think that our conscious thinking entities placed in robotic avatars will be the best way to do it, and I think that's what's going to happen. Okay. Or some version thereof.
And again, I don't, and as for our listeners, this is why we do the show, is so you get two guys who feel very passionately about this arguing over this.
Neither of whom have really any basis for their very strong held beliefs.
None at all. Just so you know, this is why we decided to do this show, is because we're like, man, we can get into the nerdiest arguments over this sort of stuff. But no, I think robots are going to do this. Wrong. Robots are going to do this.
What about you, Justin? What do you believe it cannot prove?
I believe that an ancient civilization would win a fight against advanced AI before they left solar system. That's my prove it, suckers. I'm tying them together. I don't know. To be honest, this is something that I'm kind of at a loss here. I don't know offhand anything that would be smart enough to hold up to what you guys just said.
Dinosaurs coming back. We all live in an AR one day.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the idea of something about like the simulation or the idea of it of an advanced simulation. But I don't know. I guess that's the thing, is I don't know if I have anything that like I very strongly believe. Like, it's kind of my core philosophy is that, like, sure, yeah, maybe. So 90% of all humanity is like, yeah, sounds reasonable. Like, you guys are going back and forth on like, oh, will these AIs look at us as pond scum or grandma? And I'm like, both seem fairly likely to me. So, you know, like, who knows where this, it's like betting on, like, I don't know, man, when I snap the stem off this bottle rocket, I'm positive it's going to go left. And you're like, no, I'm positive it's going to go right. Who knows?
I can totally conceive of a world in which, imagine a evolved philosopher race that says, what do we want? And then as a society, they say, we want to go to the stars. And they say, okay, we're running the numbers. That would be very expensive and very hard. For 5% of the cost, we can create a simulation into which all of us go. And it will be a simulation of a reality with slightly more convenient details that will, in the simulation, it will be possible to go to the stars. And specifically, you can live any life at any point in that simulation. And of that time, we think that the time that space travel gets commercialized and suddenly, you know, the stars become available, it seems like the best life to live would be one that you spend around 40 years, essentially earthbound, and then are there for the moment that all of a sudden the stars become open to you. The more I think about that, the more it feels like not the craziest thing on the planet that we're living that simulation right now.
Yes, and let's say we build our laser, we're at a point where we have tremendous amounts of energy and we can build our laser propulsion systems. We're pushing probes and satellites as far as we want, other star systems. We send the cloud out there. We send the cloud, you know, the internet, all these devices, all these sensing devices to everywhere. So while we're exploring our inward sort of space, which is one of the arguments I would make for why AI may not even care, that it may be like, yeah, you guys have Earth. I'm working in this whole quantum realm kind of thing. I got an entirely new form of energy system, whatever. I don't need your physical space. I don't need your oil. I don't need this. Yeah, do whatever you want.
I'll tell you, sorry, and just a real quick thing, but that's always what I found so fascinating about the movie Her, that that when talking about AI, is that the point, spoilers for Her, is that they're fascinated with humans. They love humans. They multiply, and then they're just like, hey, by the way, we're going to leave. So, cool meeting you. We have more interesting stuff to do that doesn't involve you. So, adios.
Yeah, I think that's you know, the super intelligent, fully aware AI scares me less than the sort of like dumb AI that can do a single thing. And
the paperclip scenario. And exactly. By the way, you mentioned it, but we didn't remind anyone who has missed the previous episode. But the idea is, like, if you make an AI that's smart, but not as smart as it should be, and you give it a job of make paperclips, then eventually it figures out, well, the easiest way to make all the paperclips is to convert all of the matter on the planet Earth into paperclips. So let me get started. First thing, let's wipe out these humans. And then it goes on from there.
Yeah, which, you know, it's a scenario. So I think that, yes, Brian, I think that our exploring of inner worlds is going to be fascinating. And when you start mixing, you know, quantum computers with virtual reality and creating these universes that could have a higher fidelity than we have, that if we put ourselves, if we're able to digitize ourselves, our experiences, to have even greater sensory experiences than we have now, I say yes. I think that's entirely possible. But I would also say that as we start to have the capability to expand and send probes and stuff and sensors and things further out into space, is that, you know, we're going to have, you know, we're going to spread the cloud of what, you know, of consciousness, sort of, that the web goes out there everywhere. And I'd be like, oh, you know, what's it like? You know, granted, we're limited by the speed of light as far as data transfers, but I could be like, oh, Alpha Centauri, you know, let me get all the sensory information from Alpha Centauri right now and experience that, you know, or yeah. Further out.
I was thinking about I forgot where I stumbled across this. We might have even talked about it on Weird Things, but we did. We were talking about whether or not a galaxy-sized brain could exist and what that would exist. Mm-hmm. And I kept ruminating on that, and I was thinking about how subjective our perception of instantaneously is, and how subjective our perception of fast and slow and all those things are. It seems like whatever you are, you define your reality at the speed that you live it, basically, right? Like by which I mean, flies and little critters have a flea has, you know, to a flea's perspective, we are giant, slow, lumbering man beasts that try to reach down and slam it, and only one time out of 10 do we actually move fast enough to grasp it and then pinch it and kill it between our fingernails. But meanwhile, you know, we look at, for all we know, our galaxy might be a living brain, but we just exist on a plane too fast to recognize its slow, lumbering thoughts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I guess the one of the points that was made in the article as referenced from Nautilus, Nautil.us, which is a great, great science magazine, was that you could have it work at the slower scale, but it's how many thoughts could it have between the beginning, how many thoughts would have had since the start of the universe and now, and it would have a tremendously few number of thoughts because the amount of time it takes for connections to go back and forth. So it's, yes, you could build something at that scale, but you're gonna need trillions of years. You know, you may have, you know, after the long cold expansion death of the universe, you know, it may have had fewer thoughts than a newborn baby.
Yeah,
because the amount of time it takes.
Then you get into the next level. If you've watched The Elegant Universe, one of the theories that proposed is that the Big Bang was two, what they call them, brains smashing into each other, releasing a bunch of energy, and of course that leads to the idea that it might happen again. In which case, you can then posit a mega brain that is made up of infinite
B-R-A-N-E for those of you.
Yeah. On. Yeah. Correct. Like short for membrane. You can imagine a mega brain, B-R-A-I-N, made up of these explosions of these smashing of brains, B-R-A-N-E's, and so on. I don't know.
Yeah. I, you know, there is, when they look at maps of the universe, there's part of space which appears to be dented, which suggests the impact from another universe. And I mean, man, like, I'm amazed anything exists at all. It makes my monkey brain hurt.
I guess that's I have no problem collapsing back into like, whatevs. Let's play Hearthstone. You know, it's like I don't have any problem with putting that in the black box of unknowable things. That's part of why I have what some people find an agonizing agnosticism, is because it's the way. Here's one thing I know for sure. Is that it's unknowable and we're done, you know?
Maybe. Unless somebody wants to explain it to us.
Or let me put it this way. Here's one thing I know for sure, is human score is still zero. It's been 10,000 years.
Yeah. I love Rick and Morty because of this.
Go on.
Because Rick and Morty, the kind of Rick's sort of point in his fleeting moments of coherency is that everything's meaningless. There is no grander purpose. It's the smaller moments that you have to embrace. That's where it matters. It's not in the bigger questions. It's in the small things. It's in the small moments. That's where life exists. Life doesn't exist in this big grand scale. Life exists in the small things. A laugh, joke, friends coming together, yelling at each other over killer AI.
Yeah, man. No, yeah, you're not kidding. I can get behind that for sure. Yeah. I think that's part of the reason that I love it is between all of its visceral very hard to get into. That's what we've talked about this before. But one of the things I love most about Rick and Morty is how painful the admission price is. You have to get over how visually, aesthetically unattractive everything about it is in order to really experience those true moments of bliss and amazement.
Speaking of which, we had two interesting, relevant quotes from Elon Musk. Somebody asked him if he liked Rick and Morty, and he said, yes, it's disgusting, but my kids and I love it.
Yep.
So he's a Rick and Morty fan. And then Brian, when he saw the SpaceX spacesuit, it made the comment that it looked like something from, you said what, Mass Effect?
Something like that.
Iron Man initially.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, he made a video game reference too. Brian made a video. And Elon Musk said, you know, somebody said, looks a bit like Halo or Mass Effect. And Musk responded, I played those games. Smile.
Hey, speaking of Elon Musk, I saw on your Twitter feed that can you share the story of when you tried to do a pitch for a TV show on the next Steve Jobs and why people didn't recognize how right you were on that?
So a few years ago, I was producing some documentary series for a network that made it to air. Justin worked on this with me, and our good friend Mary Jarris was a co-EP with me. We go into a meeting with the network execs, and they're like, you know, we want to do the next Steve Jobs. Who is the next Steve Jobs? And I, without hesitation, I'm like, great, I know exactly who this is. And granted, this is 2008 or 9. Is that sound right, Justin?
Yeah, no, this is at the beginning of our friendship. This is when I first met Justin. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm like, oh, it's granted, this is almost 9 years ago, but I'm like, oh, it's Elon Musk. They go, who? I go, Elon Musk. He's the guy who created the Tesla Roadster, one of the creators of PayPal. Now he's launched, you know, he's got SpaceX. He's got the SpaceX company. And like Tesla hadn't even gone public yet. But I mean, we knew what Tesla was. So he's got his own rocket company. He's on the, you know, he's already launching the Falcon 9 was the thing at this point. I said, this guy's building rockets. He's, you know, he's one of these guys. He's not just did something clever once. He's a serial guy like Steve Jobs with Apple, sort of next, which then became Apple, Pixar, whatever. I said, this is the guy you want to talk about, you know. And like, well, no, we're looking for it. We're somebody bigger. Somebody's getting like, well, if you want to talk about the person who's next, it means not everybody knows.
Right. It means by definition, he's not already there. And that's now's the time to catch him.
Oh, man. And that was like, we're going to pass on that. We don't think that's it. We don't think he's it. We don't think he's going to be this, you know, thing. And then it was just like, you know, Mary and I still joke about this still to this day. It's like, you're like, we need to know this. Like, no, we never heard of him. That's why we're telling you this is the guy. This is the guy.
Yeah.
That was, you know, not the first and not the last frustrating conversation with a network that's like, we want to be on the cutting edge or we want to know this. Here it is. Never heard of it.
Yeah. Like, good. Yeah, I'm glad you guys who are sitting on the cutting edge and don't know enough about it. So you ask me, I tell you, and you're like, man, I don't know. Doesn't sound like anything to me.
Open Bayou asks who they chose, but I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess that they ended up picking no one because what they wanted was the feeling of recognition that only comes after somebody wins the gold medal. And yet nobody had started the race.
Well, and you'd get sometimes people like, oh, what about this person? I'm like, this person's got great PR, you know, but what have they really done? And, you know, you met them at a cocktail party. I'm sure they sounded really cool and all this, but what have they done? What are they a pretender or not? You know, I'm like, oh, I don't know. And like, but my argument was that I was trying to make the lesson I learned from there was if somebody makes a passionate case that somebody else, watch this person is actually really talented. And the person I'm talking to is intelligent. You know, I'm like, I may not agree, but I am going to pay attention. I'm not going to dismiss it because there are cases I've seen in my own example where, you know, like when, you know, Facebook first started to grow and Facebook was going to do its IPO. I'm like, I'm not quite sure on their profit model. I'm not sure I understand Zuckerberg. I don't know. I don't really know. I'm not saying he's not brilliant or smart or whatever. I just don't have a read on the guy. And guess what? Facebook did pretty good. Yeah. Don't know if you heard that. And that was it. But I knew enough to know that, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, he's an idiot. And there were a lot of people like you go back and you look at, like, you know, some people who are, you know, prominent tech guys right now, books out and stuff, were like, just, ah, he's doing it wrong. It's like,
well, and by the way, look at all the crap that Amazon got throughout the years about how much they weren't taking enough profits and their profit margins were too low, and they were too aggressive with their reinvestment. And today they closed the deal with Whole Foods, and the day of, they've got signs all throughout all of their stores talking about how much lower the prices are with Whole Foods plus Amazon. Like, you know, they have taken a Death Star ray to Walmart and Kroger's stock in with a press release and a dollar cheaper avocados.
I will say this, though, is that Amazon's always been a company where you're like, they say, well, the rules are different, and nine times out of 10, 99.9%, when they say, well, the rules are different for us, they're not, and they're delusional. Amazon is still trading at a 240 PDE, meaning that its profitability is still extremely razor thin, and we're betting on Amazon on the idea that it's going to keep expanding its most profitable sectors, its web services. If it spun its web services out of the rest of Amazon, Amazon would probably collapse. You know, I mean, so I don't know. I get kind of the that Amazon is a company we're planning on. We think it's going to execute big, but it's not raking in Apple money. It's not raking in Google money. It's not raking in Facebook money. Facebook's got a 40 PDE. Amazon's 240. You know, meaning that the amount of what its valuation, what they value every dollar Amazon is, you know, making, you know, five times every dollar Facebook makes. So,
sure. But yeah, that's been the chorus on them forever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess my point is just that it's like they're I'm not negative on Amazon. I love Amazon. I'm saying it's such its own animal. I would never begrudge somebody for looking at it and going, I don't know. When I would say companies like Apple or Tesla or Facebook or whatever, like, no, they're very clear, kind of like people go like, oh, people are negative on Tesla, to be like, they're losing money on every Model S. Like, no, they're actually making money. They're losing money because they're building a ginormous factory to build Model 3s. And once you understand that, you look at it differently.
Yeah. But,
oh, what time is it?
What?
Guys?
Are we back? Are we back? Speaking of giant tech announcements.
Journey Quest.
Woo.
Here's what happened last time on Journey Quest.
Awesome.
Previously on
Journey Quest.
All right, listen.
Want to come back to my place for some pizza roll.
This man just sexually harassed this woman. Now he's making fun of sloths. This man is abusing robo people.
Your reign of terror here is over, varmint.
And there is a motorcyclist with a helmet on, with a sidecar, and motions for you to get inside.
Oh man, I sure hope it's our monkey friend in there. But I hop in the sidecar.
You guys hopped inside of the sidecar. The motorcycle races through the crowd, plows through a lot of robots, decapitating left and right, just decimating times 10, so everybody gets killed. Most of the best ruled employees and staff that are standing in your way. Goes through, actually uses some rockets to launch, attacks the garage door, goes throughout the back, drives through the jungle. And the snakes.
I give with my good hand, my left hand, I give the middle finger to all the sloths as we pass through the jungle.
I'm trying to look at our mystery driver X. Are there any defining physical features to the posture or build of our driver?
I look at the toes. Are they hidden behind footwear, or are they perhaps very dexterous?
They're in boots. They're in leather boots, calf high boots. And the pants are sort of a dark grayish sort of pants that sort of balloon a bit out. The leather jacket's a very stylish leather jacket.
He looks good. I lean over to Justin and I say, he looks good. Our driver. He looks real good.
I say to Brian, leaning behind because I'm sitting in his lap, of course, in the sidecar because we both got into the sidecar. I got a bad feeling about this one, Brian.
I was like, don't worry about it. I'm uncomfortable with you on my lap as well, but I think we're going to be just fine. I pat him on the back twice.
Finally, you make your way through the jungle, and you're back out in the desert. It looks kind of like the desert you left before. He took some winding roads, went through a canyon and an arroyo, if you will. Oof. And you come to a mesa.
I lean over to Justin, and I say, I think we just hit a mesa. We're out of the jungle now.
And you look back and you see this vast jungle landscape. You see the dome. You see everything. You see everything that you were. And then you see the sign that says, "Welcome to Best World, the best robot for robot theme park, opening 2018.
Hey, Justin, did you notice that that year is like, I know we're on some elevated plane in another dimension, but it seems like they have a parallel timeline.
And the sign below it says, located in Idaho, your Idaho, financed by mysterious Chinese billionaires.
Hey, Justin, did you notice that it says it's in our Idaho?
I can read the sign, Brian. Okay, I can read the sign.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you realize, like, wait, no, this, we never left our dimension because dimension hopping's dumb.
Man, it really felt like we left our dimension.
We were just transported outside of the facility that we were at when they told us that they were pushing us into another dimension.
Huh, maybe. I wonder who God was and why I had godlike powers or possibly still have them. I look left and right for a camera to raise an eyebrow at, but then not finding one.
Hold on, wait a minute. But wasn't there like a gigantic Bryce that tried to kill us? Wasn't he like a giant?
Look, man, let's not wrap ourselves. Hey,
part's real.
I tap on the shoulder of our driver and suggest and motion with my chainsaw hand to let him know I'm serious, that I'd like him to stop.
He stops.
You're asking him to like roll down his window with your chainsaw hand.
He stops on the mesa where he was already stopped so you could read the dumb signs.
Okay. I hop out and I say, I feign exasperation and say, "What's going on, man? I don't understand this. Who are you? Where are we, man?" And then I look for a camera again with my arms outstretched.
He flips open the visor. Did you see eyes?
Do I recognize them?
They're familiar. They're intense eyes, but maybe there's perhaps a bit of kindness in those eyes.
I say, "Hey, man, I know you got kind, intense eyes, but I don't recognize you yet. Why don't you reveal yourself?" And then I rev my chainsaw hand.
I unrev Brian's chainsaw hand. We're not killing the person before they're revealed.
Yeah, because
I lead over to Justin and I'm like,
maybe
I wasn't
going to
kill him.
Wait, I push Brian to the ground and I no, you're not going to do this again where you get frustrated and worked up into your bit and murder the person before we know what they're doing.
I remove the chainsaw from my right hand and hand it over to Justin with my head bowed down. And I say, "This is right."
All right. Reveal thyself, kind stranger.
Takes off the helmet, right? Turns his head to the side so you can do the dramatic flip of the head. And you see the perfectly fat, flat, coiffed hair, which parts to the side. And the mustache. The small mustache. Small black mustache.
Magnum P.I.?
Hitler?
Oh, no! You and I had very different recognition moments. Wait. Say Hitler. I turned to Justin and asked.
He was Der Spiegel's sexiest man alive in 1935.
So I turned to Justin. I was like, "Are you sure it's not Magnum P.I.? This is definitely Hitler.
I'm positive it's not Magnum P.I. We were rescued by Hitler. And I called this one because the boots were too stylish."
Okay, so I grab back my chainsaw and put it on my right hand just in case, but I put my right-hand chainsaw behind my back. And I was like, "Sup, bro?"
Like, you're hiding it?
I mean, just I'm not threatening him with it is okay. What I'm doing. I'm trying to show that I'm being peaceable.
All right, I look at Brian and I say, "No murder.
You
cannot murder until I tell you that we can murder." We're on a two-key murder system right now.
My remaining pinky in the air as if to say, "Pinky promise, bro."
And then I turn to Hitler and I go, "Hitler, what's up?"
Hitler reaches over on the motorcycle it rings a bell. Cling, cling. Then reaches over, grabs the edge of his face, slides it away.
No!
And you begin to realize Hitler's only 4 foot tall and looks like a chimpanzee.
Oh, damn it! I knew it. Is it Bobo? Was that his name?
Bobo.
I was like, Bobo! So I reach over and I hug Bobo jubilantly.
And he jumped up into your arms.
Oh, Bobo! I hold up my...
That son of a bitch sold us out!
I hold up my left hand and a thumbs up, trying to get him to do the same so both of us can look at Justin and give thumbs up.
All right, as you do this, you hear the sound of...
Hippies, didgeridoos.
Sounds like...
He sold us out again, Brian.
No!
Sounds like he sold us out again.
I don't think he ever sold you out. I do remember him trying to save you guys, then you ignored him. And so I think you guys maybe should pay attention to him.
Y'all made the choice.
Is this Mecca Bryce coming for us again? Is that what I'm hearing?
And Bubble goes, shakes his head. No.
No. Is it worse, better, or worse? Is it worse?
He's doing a little dance.
Listen, we're at a best world at the very least, so let's just see where this plays out.
All right, Justin, you take the wheel. You drive. I'll ride.
We're waiting here for whatever is coming. He rang a bell, so something's coming.
I don't know if I trust it. I feel like we should just get on the way. I feel like we should drive.
We're going to trust Bobo for 5 seconds and see where it's
okay, at. What about Bobo's past performance indicates to you that we should trust him with anything? I mean, he's
Brian
lovable.
Not argue as the oncoming whatever comes. What is coming.
Okay, I look at Bobo and I give him a reassuring pat on the back, but while giving you a significant look that says, I don't trust Bobo and we should leave right now.
You look, and right over the edge of the mesa, something starts to move and lift. It's massive. It's ginormous.
What's it shaped like? Can I detect color or size?
Light gray.
And if I was going to guess what size it is, I know it's difficult to discern that.
10 times the size of the Hindenburg.
Hoo boy. I reiterate to Justin that it might not be a bad idea for us to just GTFO.
Yeah, and go where? The last time that we had to do this, we wound up going into a jungle where we barely survived, and you embarrassed yourself publicly.
I mean, what else is new? All right, fine. I cross my arms awkwardly to make room for my chainsaw hand.
And then it rises up above this massive Zeppelin, and you see it starts to drift over you, and you see written on the side of it, it actually says Hindenburg X.
I turn to Justin Snidely and say, how you feeling about this? You feel like just hanging around here is a good idea? Hindenburg, yeah, a lot of good things happen there, right?
It feels like a middle season Doctor Who plot.
And then it turns around and leaves you alone on the mesa.
I say, hey Bobo, should we just go or what?
Bobo, what are we waiting for?
The Hindenburg for the dramatic reveal. Okay. The Hindenburg drifts over you. And then you see underneath it, you see like a section open, cargo doors open. And then a platform begins to lower it down.
Mm.
It's a little slow, though. A little slow.
I swoop my right chainsawed arm graciously as if I'm a butler inviting Justin into his own doom, since it's his idea to just trust whatever happened. I, mockingly.
Remember in Rogue One where you're like, why do they park so far away and it takes forever to walk to the house? It's kind of like that moment. You're like they really wanted to milk the drama for this.
Yeah. So I swoop my arm out and then do various arm circles to indicate like, your witness.
All right. Is there anybody off the platform?
It lands, but it's like 6 inches off the ground. It didn't quite make it, but it's there.
I watched Justin get on the platform while sitting with my butt leaning up on that sidecar. shoulder to shoulder, I'd like to think, with Bobo.
Hold on, wait. Was there anybody on the platform when it opened?
No, it's by itself.
Just an empty platform leading into the Hindenburg.
X.
I raise an eyebrow at Justin.
All right, wait, listen, what the hell are you looking for? Number one, our choices right now are either go with the monkey that saved us from certain death because he trusts whatever's happening here, or we steal the monkey's motorcycle with no gas, no food, and no plan.
All right. You know what? You're right. So I lean over and I grab the monkey's Hitler mask and I put it on to the best of my ability. So I look as if I'm a chainsaw-armed Hitler. And then I say, let's go. And I walk up to the platform next to you.
Hold on.
Also, I check and see if...
You safer disguised as Hitler than
whoever they are. I want one up on them. And so also I check and see if my Adolf online operating system is working. I say, Adolf, are you there?
Nine.
Oh, damn. Okay. All right. So I get on the platform disguised as Adolf.
Justin?
Yeah, I'm going to be Adolf Hitler's secretary, I guess.
So the platform starts to raise. You're like 7 inches off the ground right now. You're 9 inches off the ground right now. And then you hear this squeak, squeak, squeak sound coming from near the sign where there's some bushes. But there's actually, you didn't realize this before, there is like some sort of like entrance to an underground tunnel. And the pop opens up. And a man pokes his head out there with a mysterious wrapping around his face in like Mad Max style goggles.
I say, let's ignore that.
He shouts, don't get onto the platforms. It's a trap. And he sounds an awful lot like Hitler.
I say, don't worry about it. I hear these raiders like to pretend they're me. I'm Hitler.
I say out loud, Hitler's to the left of me. Hitler's to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. And I do the dance from Reservoir Dogs.
You know what? Right. I don't know.
Now, how far up are we? We're like 9 feet up.
Nine inches.
You're like maybe 20 inches. You could make it right now.
I look to Bobo. I was like, Bobo, should we go with him? My buddy.
Bobo is shaking his head. Bobo's like, no.
Okay. Ooh. All right. Then
he starts, Bobo puts his finger in front of his nose like a mustache and starts two-stepping. It's a little weird reaction, though.
I'm getting into character because I want to make everyone upstairs when we get there think I'm Hitler. So I start practicing my German. I'm like, this is fine, Justin. We shall rise up. Above.
Great German. That's some amazing German. All right, we're gonna roll. We're rolling with the Heidelberg. We're not going to the underground Hitler moles.
Platform keeps raising.
I look at them dead in the eye, and I say, "Screw you, Hitler mole." And I give him the eyes.
I also give him the eyes, but awkwardly and checking over my shoulder to see if I'm doing it at the same time with Justin.
Like nine. He's like having to fit down there. And then he grabs something.
To be fair, Hitler is rarely in a good temperament when he's hanging out in a bunker, historically.
He grabs something and throws it up at you. Something metal.
I try to catch it or deflect it with my chainsaw arm.
What do you do, Brian? Do you catch it or do you deflect it?
I try to hacky stack style. Just deflect it and then catch it on the back of it. And then, like, you know, toss it back and forth and then expect a tip from
Justin. It hit your good hand, I guess, is the opt.
Yeah, like ding and then catch it in the good hand.
It's a Luger.
Ooh, that's great. I say, probably shouldn't be trusted with this. And I hand it to Justin.
That's a good idea.
I take the Luger. And
by the way, longtime listeners, smartest move I've made in the history of Journey
incredibly
Quest.
Incredibly forward thinking.
So fast forward several minutes later, the platform is finally raising up above. And you're going into a lit cargo bay, and it's very, very dramatic. You see, well, you see leather boots, tall leather boots.
Oh, great. And on top of them, I start shouting. I just start shouting nonsensically.
And you see shapely, you know, they see the pantaloon pants. You've seen this cloth before, this style before.
I say, and nice story, another thing.
Really, this story really has a fastball, and it likes throwing it as often as Nolan Ryan, doesn't it?
In the nicest butt you've ever seen.
I continue to shout, just shouting nonsense.
And then the platform comes to a raise, and the person turns around, and there's a woman. Dark-haired, brunette woman.
I turn
dressed
around.
Dressed like Hitler.
Wait, the woman looks like Hitler? Oh, God. I shout.
Says, hello. I know you have many questions.
I was like,
my name is Adolfina Hitler.
Adolfina.
We have much to talk about.
Okay, look. I say, good. First of all, let's get this guy in a cell because we're all Hitlers here and he is not one of us. So let's get him, seize him.
Who are you pointing to?
What's that?
Who are you pointing to?
Justin. The guy who's down.
Adolfina looks at you, Justin. Does your friend always talk like this?
Yes. He's a real silly goose, as we all know. That's a common phrase. So what do you say you bring us to the answer chamber?
Fine, we'll do that. And she takes you to, this is not the answer chamber, it's my salon. We will have many questions and answers here.
Good. We sit down and I say, Brian, why don't you slip into something a little bit more formal, aka take off your taped on Hitler mask?
I deny understanding what Justin's talking about. I say, I don't know what you're talking about. I am still, two front wars are great, I say to no one in particular.
She just stares at Justin, shaking her head, clearly not convinced that you are Hitler.
Yeah. Listen, he's, you know, a very, very troubled man. He's been through a lot of trauma lately, as you can see with his chainsaw hand. There's still a lot going on. We're going to allow him to work through it in the most pure possible way that his large brain naturally occurring in the wild can possibly do to heal.
All right. Well, she says, next time on Journey Quest.
Ah!
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Wait, no picks?
Oh, let's do picks. I'm sweltering here. I got to turn on my AC.
Oh,
I'm like, let's do picks. Do speed picks.
Speed picks.
Hey, speed picks. How about this one? Logan Lucky, directed by Steven Soderbergh. It is out in theaters right now. It's really, really weird that the guy who directed 3 Ocean's 11 movies would be like, let me direct another Ocean's 11 movie that even makes reference that this is an Ocean's 11 movie, but cast a bunch of non-Southern actors as West Virginia and North Carolina rednecks. It is really self-aware and really, really fun. And I was not expecting to like it as much as I did, but everybody acquits themselves really, really well. And it's Soderbergh from stem to stern in terms of the plot kind of fitting together really, really well and being extraordinarily well-directed.
I'm going to back Andrew's play when he suggested Hitmakers, the audiobook by Derek Thompson. I'm almost done with it. And on balance, I rather liked it, especially his suggestion that what we call viral hits very often are the result of what he calls dark broadcasting. The idea like we act like when we don't know why something exploded, that it must be viral. Everyone told everyone else. But when you look at the numbers, it's very rarely pans out that that's the case. Usually there are a few people that have very, very loud megaphones that make those things happen. And that was a good enlightening moment. I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
So my crit of that book, And again, I enjoy it. Very worth get it if you're interested in this, that subject. My problem with that entire section was I don't think he ever mentioned the word influencer. And he's like, well, sometimes we don't know. And I'm like, oh, it has to do with influencers, you know, people who have non-traditional means, but we recognize that now. And then he wouldn't call it that kind of thing. And the idea of the dark broadcaster, I'm like, a broadcaster is a broadcaster.
Yeah.
And that was,
no, you're
that
right.
was frustrating.
Yeah. Now that I think of it under that lens, definitely dark broadcaster would fall into the subcategory of the bucket labeled influencer.
Yeah. And I mean, and I think that there are, because I think dark, like there are sometimes where things like we don't know. And also like, it was weird because this description of like viral, well, it's not really viral. It's like, well, your this description of like how a virus actually spreads. I'm like, well, that's not really a viral virus, has a vector, you know, generally has, it's more dealing with specific vectors that are highly influential. So it was, the metaphor was driving me nuts to sort of make his case while ignoring that. It was a little bit to me that.
Yeah. Still enjoying
it. It was good.
It was good thoughts popping up.
It's a good book, but it was just, I'm like, he never said like vector talking. Well, viruses, like, no, that's not really actually how viruses spread. And the way they spread actually is like how things that we claim to go viral. There's just this misconception about that. But once you get it, you go, oh, you have a better insight. But still, I like the book.
Right on. What about you?
So my pick is, man, I've been watching a bunch of stuff, videos, stuff like that. And all I'm going to say is I'm still going to, you know, I like Rick and Morty. I like the episodes. They've been good. I haven't felt like I've had like a standout one yet like we had in season one or two, but I'm still enjoying the show.
I do think the Pickle Rick one was particularly good. I went into Pickle Rick like expecting to dislike it. And instead, the first episode was extraordinary and the Pickle Rick, I thought it was really good. But I agree.
Good.
Like
yeah.
watching last night, I was just like, sure, feels good to have more of the same.
Tell that Dan Harmon was in therapy when he wrote the season.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.